My guest is Michael Dobbs, the national education reporter for The Washington Post. He was vacationing on his brother's tiny island off the coast of Sri Lanka when the tsunami hit on December 26th. The next day, he drove up the coast to the nearest city. What are some of the other things you witnessed as you were driving around the coast of Sri Lanka?
Well, coming up from Welagama to Gaul, it's about a half-hour drive, but it took us about 2 hours to make the drive. You then got a much clearer sense of the devastation, a sort of ribbon of total ruin, 200 or 300 yards inland, sometimes up to half a mile. It varied a little bit because there's some higher parts of the coast that weren't much affected, but anything at the sea level, pretty much all the houses were ruined, all the businesses, fishing boats inland, vehicles sort of turned upside down, bridges down. The worst place to be was probably in a vehicle or a train going along the coast because you were trapped in a confined space and couldn't get out. When we arrived in Gaul, my brother has a little hotel on a hill above the city, so it wasn't affected at all, really. There's still guests, paying guests in the hotel. They'd been planning to organize a wedding there later that week. But as soon as we got to Gaul, I walked down into the city center, which was completely devastated. And the worst part of it was Gaul is an old Dutch fortress. The fortress dates back to the 17th century, a huge and very solid structure. The tsunami didn't get into the fortress, but it went round either side of the fortress. And these two rivers of water met at the bus station on the other side of the fortress and completely wiped out the bus station, caught a lot of people sitting in the buses, trapped them inside. Many people were killed by either drowned or killed by flying glass. The scene at the bus station was pretty terrible.
What did you see there?
I went down to Gaul. First of all, I walked through what used to be the shopping district of Gaul. I hadn't seen it before, so I'm not quite sure what it was like before. But at any rate, by this time, all the shops were either collapsed, they're in ruins, or they were waterlogged. Whatever possessions had been in the shops had been washed away or looted. There was a little bit of looting there. And so I walked along this sort of scene of just rubble, which bulldozers had already arrived. So they were clearing the streets of rubble. The streets were more or less clear. And then I arrived at the large open space in the middle of Gaul, which used to be the bus station. And the buses were either piled on top of each other, or the waves, the tsunami had taken up a bus from one part of the bus station and tossed it to another part of the bus station 200 or 300 yards away. It was as though, just imagine a bus station with somebody, it's as though somebody had taken, some supernatural being had taken all the buses in their hand and just plunked them in a pile on the side of the road. I've experienced two earthquakes before, one in Yugoslavia, one in Romania, and I have never seen quite the destruction that I saw along the coast and in Gaul.
Had the bodies been removed from the buses?
Most of the bodies had been removed from the buses, but they were still there were still some bodies in houses and shops around. That morning, just before I'd arrived in Gaul, actually, the many bodies had been lain out in the sun, row after row of, mainly bus passengers and people who happened to be there. And they'd been taken away. Some were identified by relatives. Others were buried in mass graves. But the following day in Gaul, the authorities actually closed off the center of the town and refused to let people into the town because they were sending the army and the police house to house searching for bodies and removing them. And by that time, there was pretty much a stench of dead bodies. So it took 2 or 3 days to remove most of the bodies from the town. And then the day after that, they finally let the townspeople back into the business section of the town. And then the town again began to assume some life. But the first day when I went down there, there were very few people there. They let me down. The police let me in as a journalist, but they weren't letting ordinary townspeople in.
Sri Lanka had a long insurgency in which the Tamil Tigers were fighting against the government. There's been a ceasefire for a couple of years. But, you know, I've been reading reports about how the Tigers have been helping a lot with the relief efforts, how the Tamil Tigers and government people have been talking to each other and collaborating on relief, which is very interesting. Did you witness any of that?
The Tamil-controlled areas of the country are more to the north and northeast. Certainly the eastern coast was very badly affected. We had a reporter there, John Lancaster, and he reported that there was unprecedented cooperation between the government and the Tamil Tigers. There'd been a ceasefire line, and one group wouldn't allow the other group to go into its territory. But there seems to have been a lot more cooperation in the last few days, but I didn't see that myself as I was right in the south, which is more of is a Sinhalese part of the country controlled by the government. But this did have an impact on this rather tenuous ceasefire between the majority Sinhalese and the Tamils. Also, the tsunami came just as the local economy was getting back on its feet 3 years after the effective end of the civil war. The economy had been pretty much destroyed, and tourists hadn't been going to Sri Lanka for a long time. And this was going to be one of Sri Lanka's best tourist seasons ever, I think. So that's another tragedy about this tsunami, that it came just as the economy was getting back on its feet.
Well, I want to thank you very much for speaking with us, and I'm glad that you and your family, you know, weren't hurt. So, anyways, thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Nice to talk with you.
Michael Dobbs is the national education reporter for The Washington Post. This morning, we called his brother Jeffrey Dobbs in Bandra on the southernmost part of Sri Lanka. Jeffrey is a businessman who owns the tiny island off the coast of southern Sri Lanka where the Dobbs family was vacationing when the tsunami hit. Jeffrey also owns four hotels in the region. Two of the hotels are still intact, but instead of vacationers, they are now filled with reporters from around the world. Jeffrey Dobbs has joined the relief efforts to get fishermen and small businesses back on their feet. He says the economy of Sri Lanka's southern coast depends on tourism and fishing. Are a lot of fishermen afraid to go back to sea now?
Well, a certain amount of them are for various reasons. I mean, obviously, this part of the coast is reliant on fishing and tourism as its main forms of income. The fishermen, of course, were very close to the sea when the tsunami struck. Not many of them were out at sea because it struck at 9:20. But, of course, many of them lost their families, and they're very traumatized because of that. There are, of course, persistent rumors that another tsunami will come, and at the moment, the biggest rumor is that there'll be a tsunami on the 8th of January. So people are very scared about that. And most of them are sleeping inland at night.
Is there any scientific evidence to back up that rumor or that prognostication?
If I'm honest with you, I think it is total rumor, but I really haven't had the time to listen to any radio broadcast, so I can't pass comment on that.
Are you taking it seriously?
To be honest, I'm not taking it seriously, but you know, in fact, yesterday, while we were bringing in some fish, the first catch of the day, there was a rumor that there was a tsunami and there was complete panic in the street.
Let's get back to the fishermen for a moment. I know that there are so many people who were lost at sea that a lot of people are afraid to eat fish that are caught in that sea because of all of the dead and decomposing bodies. What are some of the concerns about the quality of the fish?
Well, that is another rumor which is spreading around the country. And in order to try and squash that rumor, 2 nights ago we asked the fishermen of the fishing village of Marissa to go out to sea. They came back in the morning, and we had a barbecue in front of some of the world press. We ate the food with the fishermen to indicate that we did not have any fears about eating it. We then organized for seven fishermen to go up to Colombo to meet the president and her entire cabinet at their weekly cabinet meeting. They were presented with the fish. We also presented fish to the leader of the opposition, Mr. Ranil Wickremesinghe, and we are urging people to eat fish. I mean, of course, in Colombo, restaurants and hotels stop serving fish, and we want to get people serving fish. And in fact, we're appealing to the world to eat fish and, in fact, order fish from Sri Lanka so that will encourage the fishermen to go back to work.
This is a pretty gruesome image, but I was wondering if there are concerns that fishermen who use nets to catch fish would also be catching bodies or body parts in those same nets.
Well, I suppose there is a chance that that might happen, but hopefully that won't happen. I mean, I guess it might happen. Actually, next week we have 10 divers coming into our area, and they will be diving and searching for bodies. But I mean, I don't think that many people went out to sea. Most of the people who died were people who were caught in the tsunami, which came inland. And they were trapped in buildings. I mean, I myself heard a lot of people dying from being drowned as buildings collapsed around them.
Jeffrey Dobbs is a businessman in southern Sri Lanka. He's now working to help local fishermen and small businesses get started again. We'll hear more about his relief efforts in the second half of the show. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Let's get back to the conversation I recorded this morning with Jeffrey Dobbs, a businessman who owns three hotels on the coast of southern Sri Lanka and owns a tiny island with a hotel just off the coast. He's now part of the relief effort trying to get local fishermen and small businesses back on their feet. Can you describe a little bit how the area around you has changed in the past few days? I'm assuming that things are physically being cleaned up, that bodies have been removed, and that things aren't exactly returning to normal, but that there's some sense of time having elapsed between the tsunami and now. Can you just describe a little bit how things have been changing in the past few days?
Well, I'm very impressed with the way that villagers have cleaned up their villages. I mean, of course, there's still a huge mess around, and there is complete devastation in some villages, and buildings have totally collapsed. But all the roads are open now. You see huge piles of rubbish which have been neatly collected. I'm honestly impressed with the way that the villagers have done, you know, to the most extent, done the cleaning up themselves. And every time I go up and down the coast road, which I'm doing quite frequently now, you see huge strides. So when In fact, on the 28th of December, I was very depressed and thought this is going to take years for the economy to rebound. But, you know, I'm cautiously optimistic that the economy will rebound reasonably quickly.
Have you seen many signs of foreign aid?
Well, I've heard that there is lots of foreign aid in the capital. To be honest, I have not seen a lot of aid down in the south, particularly in the small villages, which are the areas which we have decided to help. I mean, obviously the city of Gaul has received a huge amount of publicity through the tragedy that they suffered, and, you know, a lot of aid has gone to them, but it still has to trickle down into the villages. And, in fact, I was just rushing from a village today to get this interview.
After having been swimming in the ocean when the tsunami struck, are you spooked at all about being near the ocean?
Not at all. In fact, I went swimming in the sea today. At the moment, we don't have fresh water, so in order to wash, I have to swim in the sea every day.
You own several resort hotels and a small paradise island, and tourism, I know, has been very important for the economy of Sri Lanka. I'm wondering how you feel about that kind of luxury getaway that you run, if your heart will still be in that after the devastation of the tsunami.
Well, of course it will. I have no intention of leaving Sri Lanka, and I'm actually sitting with my builder at the moment, who's helping me at the moment with distributing food to camps, and I am in fact starting to renovate my places tomorrow.
Tell us something about this coalition that you've put together of businessmen to help distribute aid to people who have been affected by the tsunami.
We are not a charity. We are not an NGO. We are a group of private individuals and companies who sprung up because nothing was happening. And we now have formed a loose sort of coalition of like-minded people spreading from Bentota, which is approximately 50 kilometers south of the capital, all the way down the coast and all the way up the east coast. And we're swapping information, we're transferring supplies where supplies are needed. You know, we're not hoarding, we're not being squirrels. We can make instant decisions because we don't have to make a decision by committee. This is all our own money. Of course, we hope that people will support us by sending us funds later, but at the moment, it's all our own money. If people, you know, I have a whatload of Sri Lankan rupees in my pocket, and when I think I see a worthwhile cause, I just pay out the money without asking for any, I don't ask for any receipts from them, and I don't. I just say to them, I will come back tomorrow, and if I don't see any progress, you won't get any more money. I mean, for instance, there's a person who sells little boats opposite my island whose livelihood has been ruined because there are no tourists coming. I do have some shops in Colombo, and I've said, okay, if you make some boats, I will sell them in your shop. Equally, Weligama, which is the village which is opposite my island, is very famous for ladies who make lace. And I said to them, in fact, I gave them just $500 today, and I said, you clean up your place. You get back to work, I will buy you instruments for you to make your lace. And if I see improvements, I will fund you more money. And you know, that is the way that I think reconstruction should take. I mean, I don't think the whole point is to get people back to work. You know, that is my message.
Have you ever done anything like this before?
I've never done anything like this before at all. I'm a total amateur at it. But, in some ways, if you don't know what you're doing, you just get it done. And that is what myself and my colleagues, I have a Belgian colleague here, I have a German colleague, I have Sri Lankan colleagues who all think in the same way, totally unselfish. And just, you know, wanting to get Sri Lanka moving again.
How are you deciding which business to help out and give money to, which fishermen to try to help?
Well, we're trying to help all the fishermen. I mean, we've in the village, in the Bay of Weligama, there are 10 fishing communities. We've taken all their numbers. I mean, some have been dishonest and sort of overstated their losses, but those people we're going to give a black mark to. And, we've told them that... if that happens, we will not give them aid. And in fact, most of the fishermen, they realize that and are being very responsible about it.
Thank you very much, and good luck with your work.
Thank you very much.
Jeffrey Dobbs is a businessman who owns several hotels in southern Sri Lanka. We spoke this morning. Coming up, a story about global culture. Spider-Man has a new counterpart in India. This is Fresh Air.